Hello and welcome to this week's edition of In Accord. It's good to be here with all of you. I hope those of you in the United States enjoyed your long weekend. We had a holiday weekend here in the U.S. And of course, all of us are looking forward to that double Sabbath Pentecost weekend coming up in just a few days. Last week, Mr. Johnson mentioned the fact that we have our first CAGWA youth camps coming up for this summer in just a couple of weeks. In fact, on June 8th through the 11th, we have the Lone Star preteen camp. And as he mentioned then, we want to remind all of you to continue to keep the camps, the preparation for the camps, as well as the safety of our children, teens, and the staff in your prayers during not only these initial days of camp, but also throughout the summer. We appreciate it very, very much. Mr. Franks reported a couple of weeks ago about the ministerial conference, and I think all of us got a good shot for those 20 minutes or so of what was said and what was experienced at the conference. Those of us who were there, of course, had 2.5, 3 days of conference that we made reference to and enjoyed it very, very much. But today what I want to share with all of you is a publication that we actually made available to all of our elders. And it was a publication that many of you have probably seen. It's entitled The International Work 2025 for CAGWA. And what it is, of course, is a publication that puts together pictures. It's like really a picture album, photo album of all of the elders that serve outside the United States around the world. And in here is also a description of each of the regions, each of the areas, the congregations they serve, as well as some pictures of the congregations themselves. So I think you'll find it very, very inspiring, very helpful. Each of the elders were able to take one home. We also provided all the pastors with a copy for each of the congregations that they serve. And the pastors are making available to all of you the entire publication in PDF electronic format. So hopefully all of you will be able to access that and be able to see the faces of some of the names that you hear about of God's people that serve the brethren, your brothers and sisters, around the world. Well, today what I want to share with all of you are the details of a trip that I took near the end of the Feast of Unleavened Bread with Mr. Tom Clark. We were in Ghana in Nigeria. Now, we will often refer to West Africa, which is where he served for almost 20 years as senior pastor. But what we're talking about is the English-speaking countries in West Africa. As many of you know, Mr. Joel Meeker serves a number of congregations throughout Africa, a couple of which are in West Africa that are French-speaking. But Mr. Clark was on his last trip, his final trip, as senior pastor to these areas, and I accompanied him. As I said, it was during the end of the Days of Unleavened Bread, from April the 18th through April the 30th. And as I mentioned a few moments ago, Mr. Clark actually served while he was serving as a pastor here in the United States for all those years, also served as a senior pastor in West Africa. And this was his final trip where he was saying his goodbyes to all the brethren that he's come to know over the last 20 years and the elders that he has worked with. During the 12 days that we were actually on the ground, we had 3 Bible studies, 2 Sabbath services, and one of those was Holy Day, and 4 ILP classes that were conducted. So between traveling to these different areas and presenting these things, it was a busy couple of weeks. We actually started the trip by flying into the capital city of Ghana in Accra. Accra has a very large airport. We came in at a bit different times, and we spent the night at an airport hotel there in Accra. And that evening, Mr. Clark and I hooked up as we came in on different flights. And the next morning, we left with the driver that he had hired, and one that he's used actually for many years for the 5-hour trip to Winneba. Winneba was the first congregation that we visited. Winneba is actually on the coast of Ghana, and it's pastored by a gentleman by the name of Joseph Ba. I've known Mr. Ba for almost 30 years. We had a chance to meet with the small congregation. We had about 25 there that evening, and he introduced us. We were able to have our Bible study and discussion, a bit of a fellowship in what was a really dimly lit hall. What you find in some of these places in Africa is that sometimes you have power outages, and sometimes you don't have much power where you are. So, you know, between lamps and lights off of our cell phones, we were able to get by and enjoy the time we had with the brethren there. The next day, we had a couple-hour drive to the city of Elmina. Elmina actually has the largest congregation of CAGWA in all of Ghana, and it's pastored by Mr. Ruel Dima. Now, Elmina is a very unique place. It's a coastal city, and its history goes back about 450 years. There's 34,000 people there now, but there weren't that many when the Portuguese actually built a fort there back in the day when they were exporting gold and ivory and sadly, the slave trade early on as well. But it's a fishing port now. And as you can see by the pictures, some of these boats that they use are very decorative boats that are used by the indigenous people. Now, while the majority of people that live in Elmina, of that 33,000, actually get their livelihood directly or indirectly from the fishing trade, it still is a very, very poor place. But we do have a very vibrant congregation there. And that next day, on the Holy Day, which was the last day of unleavened bread, Mr. Clark gave his final message there. He and I gave split sermons that day. And on that day, the brethren, of course, and the local pastor honored him for his almost 20 years of serving in the area. The special music was very special because of it being his last Sabbath there. And they presented him with a couple of keepsake gifts to take home, one of which was an art piece that was done, a picture of he and his wife. And I'm sure he'll cherish that very, very much. The following day on Sunday, we actually held classes for the ILP couples in that part of the country. We had, I believe, 7 couples that were together. We had our 2 classes, an opportunity to fellowship with them as well. And then the next day, on that Monday, we had what really would be the final meeting that Mr. Clark had with the 3 pastors we now have in Ghana. We spent the better part of the afternoon going through one of our pastoral continuing education classes. Also had quite a lengthy discussion on how the brethren in Ghana can be served best in terms of speaking and sermons and things related to even preparing for the Feast of Tabernacles. Then that evening, we had, as I called it that night at the hotel, we had what was the Last Supper that Mr. Clark had with these 3 pastors together. And it was an emotional evening, but one that contained a lot of laughter and good stories as well. The following day on Tuesday, we got together with our driver once again and made the almost 6-hour drive north to Kumasi. Kumasi is the 2nd largest city in all of Ghana, and it is pastored by Adonijah Blay. That next evening, we combined the ILP classes with Bible study with the small group we had there in Kumasi. And I will say that just as we pulled up to where we had to walk to where the church building was, there was a power outage. So out came the cell phones, you know, looking for our flashlights so we could see where we were walking up into the hall. But when we got up to the hall, lo and behold, there was light. And fortunately, the pastor has a solar unit with a small battery, and we was able to provide light for Bible study that evening. Well, of course, Mr. Clark said his goodbyes to that group as well after we conducted Bible study, and we were able to fellowship with the brethren there. One of the things that I've always looked forward to in going back to Ghana, and to some degree with a few in Nigeria, is the fact that some of these young families that are there in the congregation now were teenagers back 25 years ago when we conducted our first youth camp in Ghana many, many years ago. And now they're married, have families, have a career. It was very great to have that opportunity to spend time with some of these couples after Bible study that night. Well, on Thursday, we actually flew to Accra. Now, we were in Kumasi, and we, in this case, rather than driving back, we took a short flight, about a 45-minute flight back to Accra, and then that evening, a very late flight into Lagos, Nigeria. Now, Lagos is a unique place. Lagos is actually the largest city in all of the continent of Africa, and there's an estimated 18 million people that live in Lagos, Nigeria. It is a crowded place. And that Friday, after we got there, we held the ILP classes for 2 couples that we have in the congregation in Lagos. And then the next day, on Sabbath, we had services with the congregation. Now, the congregation in Lagos has actually grown over the last year or so. We now have additional families that are a part of our congregation there that were with a different fellowship. But some of those individuals actually have a history in their families that go way back to the days of the Worldwide Church of God. So we had a wonderful Sabbath day. Again, Mr. Clark and I gave split sermons. He said his goodbyes, and we had a wonderful meal with the group together and really enjoyed the time and fellowship we had. On Sunday, the next day, we took a short flight from Lagos, Nigeria, to a place called Benin City. Some people just mentioned Benin, but Benin itself is the name of a country, so they refer to it as Benin City. And we have there a congregation of about 35 brethren. So while we flew there in the morning of that Sunday, that evening we had the group come together in the church hall, and we had Bible study. But before Bible study, they made a presentation to Mr. Clark saying their goodbyes and giving him a gift to remember them by, a very beautiful art piece, but also a handmade staff that they had made for him with his name etched in the top. And of course, in giving that to him, they were commenting on his spiritual leadership over the years and how much they appreciated him in the time that he had spent there with them in Nigeria, as well as his wife, Mary, over the years. And the next day, we actually had an ILP class for two couples. We have two couples in the ILP. We spent some time with them. And then the next day, we said our goodbyes. And the deacon that Mr. Clark actually ordained as a deacon and has worked with for many, many years, his name is Osas Ajimien, drove us to the airport, gave him a hug, and said his final goodbyes to him as well. You know, Mr. Clark, as I mentioned earlier, he's served in that part of the world for almost 20 years. I remember distinctly when he and I were talking on the phone over 20 years ago about him being asked to serve in that part of the world to assist what was then the senior pastor. And having traveled there a few times, I encouraged him to. I said it would be an adventure, but you'll come to know and love people that you otherwise would not have that chance and opportunity to. Well, needless to say, he and his wife Mary, who has accompanied him on some of the trips, have done so for almost 20 years. And in serving as a senior pastor, whether it be Tom Clark or his replacement, which, by the way, is Mr. Paul Carter. Mr. Paul Carter, as all of you know, is actually he and his wife being relocated to the UK here in the next several weeks, where he'll be assuming the pastorate of pastoring the congregation there in the United Kingdom, but also is now serving as the senior pastor over West Africa, replacing Mr. Clark. Now, he's traveled with Mr. Clark over the last couple of years, but during that period of time, they would travel, and Mr. Clark, over the 20 years, traveled to that part of Africa three or four times a year. Now, mind you, this is in addition to him pastoring congregations in the United States. In each of those trips, they usually tried to take advantage of being there at least a couple of Sabbaths. So you know that there's a lot of history behind what Mr. Clark has done over the years, working with a number of the pastors in the last 11 years with the brethren in Nigeria. Before departing Nigeria for home at the end of that trip, I asked Mr. Clark if he would comment on the many years that he served as senior pastor in West Africa. Tom, I'd like to ask if you could comment on how long you've served in Ghana and Nigeria and what your primary responsibilities were.
Sure. I began serving it started in Ghana in 2006. So end of this year, it will be 20 years. And I started as the assistant senior pastor, transitioned to the senior pastor. We have employed pastors in Ghana. Currently, we have three. My job, because of language barriers and culture barriers, I don't have the same ability to work individually with the members. My primary responsibility is to work with the pastors. I try to teach, to raise their level, their skills, and then it trickles down to the members. I visit with the members. I travel around. I have visited all of the congregations we've had in Ghana multiple times. But I hope that's encouraging to the members, but I'm limited in the amount of deeper conversation or counseling I can do with the members, largely because of the language barrier. In Nigeria, we don't have an elder, and until last year, we didn't even have a deacon. So I am the pastor for Nigeria, and everybody there speaks English. So I'm much more able to communicate, to work with, to counsel them than I am in Ghana.
How often did you make your trips throughout the years to these two countries?
Most years, it averages about three times. At a peak, I had one year that, due to some specific circumstances, I had to make five trips in one year.
Wow.
And that was a lot.
Yeah.
But most of the time, it's been three times a year.
Yeah, understood. Are there any unique experiences you've had? I'm sure you've had many, but are there any particularly unique experiences you've had while serving and traveling to these countries to serve the brethren?
There have been a lot of very unique experiences. One that comes to mind, I was here over the Spring Holy Days one year, and we have a congregation in Yeji, which is on one side of Lake Volta. Across the lake, it's about 7 miles across, we have a congregation in the village of Makongo. And we were up there during the days of Unleavened Bread. there's a large ferry that goes across the lake, and that was fine. But by the time we were done with services, they had some food and talking and being with the members. The last ferry had already left. And the only way to get across the Volta was on a large dugout canoe. The bottom of it is dug out, and then they kind of put planks up on the side, and it has a little outboard motor. It actually has two of them on the back. And so we start out across the lake. The man who is traveling with me, as I discovered, like many Ghanaians, cannot swim. He is scared to death of water. He's got a death grip on the side of this canoe. And we were told the goal is to get across before the sun goes down, because at sunset, the winds tend to whip up on the lake. And as it got darker and darker, my traveling companion is getting paler and paler. As we approached the other shore, we're still a ways out. The man in the back started the second motor. And so you felt a little extra push from that. We slid up onto the beach on the other side, and I thought it was an enjoyable trip. I thought my companion was going to kneel down and kiss the beach on the other side. But I never expected to travel across the Volta in a dugout canoe.
Wow, wow. What about some of your taxi rides? I'm sure taxi rides in Africa, I'm sure you've had a taxi ride or two that you remember that were interesting.
Well, yeah, I've had all kinds of taxi rides. One of them, my seat, the passenger seat, the frame had broken on the bottom, so it was more like a rocking chair. So every pothole, everything we went through, I was rocking back and forth. But probably one of the most unique, I was headed out to the village of Abrima Gona to conduct a Bible study. We got out there and there was no power, which is not unusual. They have a little generator, but they couldn't get the generator to start. So we have no lights, no microphone. They talk to the taxi driver. He pops the hood, pulls one of his spark plugs out of the car. We put it in the generator. The generator starts. We go through the Bible study. When we're done, they take the spark plug out of the generator, put it back into the taxi, and he drives me back to the hotel.
Oh, wonderful. That's Africa.
That's Africa.
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
I wanted to ask you before wrapping this up, what is a main takeaway or a lesson that you've learned in your experience of working with the brethren and traveling to these countries over the last almost 20 years?
There are so many things you learn. Different culture, different language, different backgrounds. But the neat thing is, if you just look at the countries, it's like a different world from the farming community I grew up in the middle of the U.S. But it's not just the culture, the language, that sort of thing. Within the church, there is a unity of God's Spirit. God is calling people from every walk of life. And I'm sure if you go back through the ages, we would see the same thing. Entirely different circumstances, languages, and culture, but it's the same Spirit. And there is a unity, there's a hope. We are all working toward the same goal. If you ask any of them what is the most important thing in life, I suspect almost all of them are going to say it's the kingdom of God, of course.
Right.
I've had people ask me, do you think it's harder or easier in developing countries than it is in the U.S.? And I don't think it's harder or easier. We each battle, you know, we have to battle Satan, we have to battle human nature. That's the same across the board. I think the most important thing is we are still working on following Jesus Christ.
Right.
We are working on following that example, on building that righteous character. We may have different circumstances to deal with, but it's the same goal. And I think that's so very encouraging. There have been many wonderful examples of faith and faithfulness that I've seen here, but I've seen many examples back home. So I just see that connection, that unity with the church and our goal.
Visiting the members with Mr. Clark in Ghana and Nigeria really was a joy. It's great to see how much the brethren do appreciate someone that has served them for all this period of time. And and they appreciate visitors beyond their senior pastor. And of course, they look forward to the opportunities to see people from the United States and from other places. But I want to thank Mr. Clark and his wife, Mary, for the time and effort they've put into serving God's people in that part of the world. The time that he's spent, I know the effort, having worked with him a bit over that period of time, and the love that he's grown to have for the elders and ministers that serve there and the brethren that he serves. As I bring this this intercord to an end, I'm reminded of a narrative in the book of Acts, in Acts chapter 20. Now, in Acts 20, I think many of you probably know that is the occasion where the Apostle Paul visited Ephesus for the last time and said their goodbyes. And I'm using this example to kind of illustrate what Mr. Clark went through and what we experienced over the last week and a half when we visited together in Ghana, in Nigeria. Now, mind you, I'm going to be reading excerpts from Acts 20, but I think you'll get the point of what we're reading here historically and how it applies to when a man and his wife have served an area for many, many years, saying goodbye and may never see them again in this life. Acts 20, verse 18. "And when they had come to him, he said to them, 'You know from the first day that I came to Asia in what manner I've always lived among you, how I kept back nothing that was helpful, but proclaimed it to you and taught you publicly from house to house. And indeed now I know that you all, among whom I have gone preaching the kingdom of God, will see my face no more. For I have not shunned to declare to you the whole counsel of God. So now, brethren, I commend you to God and to the word of his grace, which is able to build you up and give you an inheritance among all those who are sanctified. I have shown you in every way, by laboring like this, that you must support the weak and remember the words of the Lord Jesus that he said, it is more blessed to give than receive.'" And then in verse 36, "And when he had said these things, he knelt down and prayed with them all, and they all wept freely and fell on Paul's neck and kissed him, sorrowing most over all the words which he spoke, that they would see his face no more." You know, when I read this, I get a bit emotional thinking about the fact that these people were saying goodbye to a man that had served them well and had really brought the truth of God to them, and they knew they wouldn't see him in this lifetime. The members that I was with and witnessed, along with Mr. Clark, when he said goodbye, they were hopeful that maybe, just maybe, they may see him again. But one of the things that they told him, in so many words in the various areas that he left, they said, "But we will see you again in the kingdom." That was that reassuring statement they left with. I think it emotionally gave them the ability to say goodbye, and of course, we know they certainly will. Well, that's about it for this week's edition of In Accord. Be sure to tune in next week when Mr. Clyde Kyla is actually going to introduce our FI Student In Accord presentation for 2025. You won't want to miss that. And as we look forward to this special weekend, I certainly wish all of you a wonderful Sabbath day. It will be a busy weekend, but also a very inspiring Feast of Pentecost.